The moat has to be built, but the moat has to be widened again and again and again. You can't just keep the moat and say, okay, my job is done.
How much of brand is will be a moat, because everyone's just performing, and falling in love with a brand is now almost, I don't know, if I think it's impossible.
Nobody's making money. Do you see brands getting to 20% EBITDA? Because I question that. I think the era of 20% EBITDA brands is over.
I have not met a single investor who said, don't do quick commerce or don't figure out how to win here.
You can't not be on the platform and say that I will wait for the P&L to make sense and then I will go. The difference between a Unilever and a Honasa is the retailer margins that they pay. Ki channel margins, if it's so different, then how do you pay money?
Blinkit has overtaken Zomato in revenues in the last quarter. Under-led businesses on the whole as a cohort do much better and grow value much faster, or grow value versus, you know, companies run by professional CEOs.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 37 of the Asymmetric Podcast. We are missing Chirag today, unfortunately unwell, but we are continuing with our programming as we are always available for you every week. Very, very special guest today, Arjun, CEO, Greater China, Reckitt Benckiser. I know you had a lot of Adi over the last 2 weeks, but we thought, you know, we should continue the process of trying to understand how great brands are built. What's emerging in the entire e-commerce, quick commerce, live commerce space globally. A little bit of banter around what should Indian founders do. Please don't get worried. Me and Arjun did not have a fight. But in case that's spicy, you should definitely tune into this episode as well. There's a new Clips channel. Do check it out. If you are too bored to look at a 2-hour, 1.5-hour podcast, we have a bunch of our talking points on short clips between 5 to 10 minutes on the Asymmetric Clips channel. Do check that out and subscribe to that as well.
Well, I want to show you guys something interesting about how timing matters, right? But this is so interest in Bombay Shaving Company versus Gillette. The red line is Bombay Shaving Company and blue line is Gillette over the last 5 years. X-axis is 5 years. And the podcast was started here. Arjun Purka has centered the company as an investor here. But this is where it's not just the podcast. Right? We also raised some money here and so on. So I'm sure some marketing has happened. But there is a certain amount of interest that has kind of garnered, I think, with the growth, etc. And I think that's where...
And what are those super peaks? Those are controversy.
Those are controversies. Dear Prachi wala ek tha, then the 18-hour one. Do you know what you've done? Raymond, do you know what you've done with the 18-hour thing?
No.
I've not told you, no? Every 18th of the month, we do something called the 18-hour sale. For 18 hours, from 1800 hours, which is 6 in the evening till 12 noon the next day, you will get certain products for 18 rupees or 18% discount additionally on certain products. That property, this 18th, which is 3 days back, did like 1 crore of sale, 1 crore of net sale on D2C on the 18th. The last month was like 70 lakhs or something. It is totally scaled. And they're like, what opportunistic line to take this horrible controversy and then make it into like this the most capitalistic thing possible. But the team has done that. It's really cool.
Yeah. But I mean, in China, you say, right, every crisis is an opportunity hidden in it.
Yeah.
But abhi to across real, if you think about it, there's so much clutter. Going back to the conversation on what is happening to long form, basically, people need dopamine, right? Ab dopamine.
Yeah.
पॉजिटिव है, नेगेटिव है, एटलीस्ट यू आर इन द न्यूज. अब वो कितने टाइम नेगेटिव न्यूज रहेगा वो भी क्वेश्चन मार्क है. लोग बहुत मेमोरीज तो बहुत शॉर्ट टर्म हो गई है. लाइक आई फाइंड इट वेरी सरप्राइजिंग. लाइक आई फील अ लिटिल फियरफुल टू बी ऑनेस्ट ऑन सी वीसीज वेर ऑलवेज पुशिंग बैक अगेंस्ट D2C ब्रांड इन्वेस्टमेंट बिकॉज देर लाइक तुम तो सारा पैसा मेटा गूगल पे डाल देते हो. सो वेर इज द मोड, वेर इज द ऑपरेटिंग लेवरेज. कल ही मैंने फिर देखा, आई थिंक मेटा एड्स वेंट फॉर अ टॉस एंड Webhav of Better Capital said, you know, there's no leverage, D2C may, etc. So, you know, it keeps happening. But now there is a bigger problem, which is everyone used to always say ki aap brand ban jao to brand ka moat hai. You know, 15-20 saal log aapko yaad rakhenge, brand ka bahut sahi moat hai. Bas brand ban jaye to moat hi moat hai. Mere ko thoda sa worry hota hai ki agar attention span itne kam ho gaye to, matlab, at some point of time, Byron Sharp's book will stop making sense, right? Nahin kya?
Even if you have a moat, you have to keep looking after the moat, right? You have to keep widening the moat. You have to keep the water fresh in the moat. You have to keep feeding the crocodiles so that they are there to bite anyone who tries to come into your moat. So a moat has to be defended also. Just having a moat is not enough.
Here, what you're saying is now, because everything is in the digital world, entry into e-com, even quick-com for that matter, it's not like they're gatekeepers who are not allowing new brands to not come in. Like, they are very open to experiment, explore, get new brands onboarded, etc. So it's not like distribution is a moat anymore. And digital, if I can say, attention spans are so low that, again, keeping that moat through just advertising is going to be hard. Even if it's branding, you're right. Like, you need to constantly be in the customer's face, if I can call it that.
See, which seems, moat is something that you also keep getting better at, right? And moat is relative. Moat is not an absolute thing. Ki maine brand khada kar diya and then people remember it, right? So you need to work on it over a period of time and keep improving yourself. So if I go back to many years ago, like when I was an assistant brand manager, we used to be taught about this thing called about the half-life of awareness or half-life of recall. We used to do this thing called copy testing, right? So very, very old days, we used to actually make a copy and test it before we aired it. We didn't have any internet in those days as such. So we would make the copy and then we would show it to 300 people. They would fill up a questionnaire. And then 3 days later, we would go back to them. And, you know, there would be important questions and not important questions. But you could see what is the recall of your advertising or recall of your brand and what happens 3 days later. Because at that time, again, there was no internet and social media. So it was judged that 72 hours is enough to see that people, you know, shit happened in life. Lots of things came up. Their attention got distracted. And if they remembered you 3 days later, that means you had something going. And we had benchmarks for that and things like that. But I think now what's happened is those 72 hours of recall has shortened. God knows, maybe 7 hours. So if you show someone something and if they remember it 7 hours later, you're doing very well in life. You don't need to wait for 72 hours to know that. So it's that attention and the half span, you know, half life of what you build, which keeps going down. And then it's relative because everyone is doing. So if you distribute it, there's another concept that we used to really track, which was called share of inputs in how we used to work. Right. So it was share of distribution, not just market share. So share of distribution, share of awareness or TVC, share of display, share of promotion, etc. But when we calculated it, we would not calculate it as an absolute number. You would always calculate it relative so that you knew what your indices were. And if your relative share kept increasing, then market share as an output was just an outcome. It was but natural that you would end up there. So the moat has to be built, but the moat has to be widened again and again and again. You can't just keep the moat and say, okay, you know, my job is done. There is no such thing as set and forget. And I think what a lot of people expect with this moat or brand ban gaya, brand is the moat or distribution is the moat, they believe in set and forget. But in the marketplace, you have to earn your keep every day when you wake up.
But tell me one thing, Arjun, I think the more I think about brand building in today's day, like the share of inputs is coming down, or the recall time has come down from 72 hours to 7 hours. And I see this in advertising also, right? Like if you just see the IPL, the quality of ads is just so cringy because they're all just constantly wanting you to not go to your phone and watch the ad. So they're putting crazy music. It's flashy. It's horrible. I don't know whether you guys are following what's happening with this ridiculous Sayyara movie. They have basically, the producer of this movie, in my view, have basically gone and paid 500 rupees in Dehadi to like lots of these Gen Z young folks to go into theaters and put on emotional performances of crying and all. So people have ripped their shirts and, you know, started crying when the movie is ended. And all of these are captured on content and put out there. This is how the movie is getting promoted, by the way. And
that's why I'm seeing a lot of this on Twitter also.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So now they're like, suddenly, why am I seeing tweets about this movie and random? Like, because the feed is quite optimized to what I watch, which is either tech or even US interest rates, kuch related hoga. Maybe little US politics also. But I've never seen Bollywood on my Twitter feed. But
a bunch of kids who like shirt faad ke ro rahe door se, because that is what is like, so now the movie producer feels ki ye nahi karunga to I will not get attention, and now
how we just go to the theater to watch it basically. That's the
culturally wahi lagta hai ki yaar, we have now brands, like the whole world has now become a bunch of performers. There is no storytelling authenticity, bahut hi kam hai. Everyone, like if you look at influencers also now, apparently in India there are 3.5 crore influencers or 4 crore, some bizarre number like that, number of influencers, like registered influencers or whatever. And all of them are just performers. Brands have now become performers. And now everyone's vying for this attention. So how do you build genuine connection and brand love, as we call the moat, right? You can't fall in love with a performer, right? I sometimes look at these influencers and creators and think, yeah, who's really building a genuine connection with you and your audience? Like, it's, and then you keep going, you keep doing more and more like attention-seeking stuff. So there's now a whole genre on YouTube of people who are rolling around in garbage because there is like just, there is poverty porn where people are kind of, you know, going giving 500 rupees to a poor person and taking the reaction. There is obviously the whole OnlyFans universe of stuff. There is so much, right? So I don't know how much a brand is or will be a moat because everyone's just performing, and falling in love with a brand is now almost, I don't know, I think it's impossible. The way I think I fell in love with Dairy Milk or, you know, any of these brands growing up, I don't know.
Yeah, but it depends where it's built, right, Shantanu? So if you see, if you look at anything, right, start with radio, TV, internet, social media, YouTube, Instagram, etc. In the beginning, when they start off, when the few start off, it's an art form. It's really an art to learn how to win, and then everything is made very well, and you know, people enjoy it, especially when there's a new media that comes up and you move to it, right? So if you try and go back and remember the first time you saw, let's say, Instagram, right? After the initial startup, it was these beautiful images or beautiful travel images, beautiful food images, whatever you like. Then gradually that art becomes media, and it just becomes a form of media which, you know, people start buying and paying for and getting, and the art aspect, there's still like really good art, but to win on art becomes very difficult because only the top 1% can win on art. So then it becomes pure brute force. It becomes media. People start buying, right? Which is what's happening, let's say, to Facebook ads and things like that. Then what happens next is it just becomes content. And people just start spitting out content, good or bad, because top of mind or frequency is something people start chasing. And then the end of it is, as you call it, garbage, or as I call it, wallpaper. Then it becomes wallpaper. And wallpaper is something that you can just ignore, which is most content on a lot of fully saturated or saturated platforms today. And then you move to the next platform, something else, or you innovate in the platform, right? So in YouTube, people tried 6-second ads, full ads, putting stuff, and then eventually ads became wallpaper. So there was the birth of the podcast, because if you were putting Bombay Shaving Company ads 4 years ago, you're competing with anyone who can buy an ad, and that's a media. So you move to the next thing, and the first podcast that came out 4-5 years ago in India, and maybe 7-10 years ago in the States and other places, they were an art form. But as more and more podcasts came, and, you know, as we were talking about the barbershop as well, what started out as an art, you were competing with other people who were doing art on YouTube at that point of time, or you were one of the only few people. Now it's gone from art to media to, it's just content. Everyone is spitting out this content. And therefore, as you see, your number of views goes down, or the number of views gets divided amongst all the people who are doing content. But what remains is the people who still think it's art are highly engaged people who are left, who come and choose the art that they want to spend their time or buy.
A lot of people take our asymmetric podcast, put it in a AI, the transcript in AI, and then like give me the key talking points, key learnings of this time, right? Which is fine. I think consumption patterns moving to AI is fine. People are trying to improve their productivity. But going back to that point, Arjun, this is where I still think if someone can build and continue to believe in that art consistently week on week over the next 10 years, 15 years, I don't see a reason why it will fade away. There'll still be connoisseurs of art and people who want to practice the art in the purest form that it always was meant to be. But what time lagega dikhne ke liye? Abhi kya hai? Wo signal dikh nahi raha aapko. Sab noise bahut zyada hai abhi. And us noise mein kya ho raha hai? Signal also gets a little confused and like, yeah, maybe let me stop this, let me move to something else. But maybe you'll have to power through the next 5 years and just say that this peak will then move on. Like all of this hordes of people who have come into content now will move away to the next fancy thing after 5 years. Then again, we'll go back to peace, right? That cycles will happen in my. I don't know how you've seen this play out in China, but this exact form, I keep thinking if I look at how Instagram was 5 years back, how Instagram is today. Like influencers were not as powerful 5 years back. Today, like TikTok or what's happened in China in Douyin, influencers are becoming more powerful on YouTube as well as Instagram. And people are moving to these cringe, because attention grabbing is very, very important. But considering you operate in China, which is, I think, 5 years ahead of, let's say, India in terms of how the behavior gets shaped up, how do you stand out in creating signal and not worry about the noise? I don't know if maybe it's a...
I think the first thing that I'll start off by saying is, what is cringe to you may be art to others. And what is art to you may be cringe to others. So one should not assume that, you know, you're on the right. As, you know, like, for example, if you're driving on a highway, everyone who's faster than you is a maniac and everyone who's slower than you is stupid, right? That's the feeling that you get. So I would not say that, I would not take like a value judgment on that. The lens that we always use, or I at least, you know, really like to use is, where is the consumer going or where is the consumer headed?
Sure.
And what does the consumer want? Because that is the, you know, that is the ultimate, let's say the ultimate test or the ultimate answer is the consumer always votes with their attention and with their wallet. So you have to see where they are going and you have to head there, or you have to be there slightly before them, where you pick up the right signals and things which are, you know, growing exponentially. And I think in recent times, you also covered it in a couple of episodes back, that the big, really big deal in China now is live streaming. And you know how big Douyin has become, and in the last quarter with the 618 shopping festival, it's actually the number one e-commerce platform in China, bigger than Alibaba also now.
I should paint this a little bit, like all these words that you're saying, like live streaming, the company is doing it, and what are the numbers? What is 618? Like, it would be good to get like some layman numbers and kind of structure on this.
Okay. Yeah, I'll try to let's start with what 618 is, right? So in China, basically there are three big shopping festivals, right? I'll try and equate it with what you have. 618 is like Prime Day. Let's put it that way. So 618, JD and Alibaba used to be the number one and number two platforms respectively in China, and they got into this thing of having a festival. So 618 was JD's birthday or anniversary. And they would have the big sale. So this can be like your big billion days in India, Amazon Prime Day or equivalent. And then 11/11 is November 11, which is called Singles Day because it's 11.11. So it started off as that, but obviously became a very big thing. And that you can call it Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Then you have Chinese New Year, which is basically in the Western world, maybe it is your Christmas sales or Christmas New Year sales. And let's say in India, maybe it's your Diwali sale equivalent, right? So, you know, roughly if you go to any country, and this is like from my old assignment where I was working on e-commerce, every country roughly has three very big windows for online sales. In the Western world, it's, as I said, Prime Day, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, summer sale, whatever. Here is Chinese New Year, which is Jan-Feb, 6/18, which is a fixed date, which is June 18th, and 11/11, which is your Singles Day. Now, the thing is that not only one platform participates, everyone participates in it. So it generally becomes everyone's day and everyone runs it. And these are key indicators also to see consumer confidence. How are people spending? Are they spending up in these days? Are they buying in these days? Are companies participating? So it's a good thing to get a pulse on what's going on. So that's like the shopping festival. So, and I think in these days, fortunes are made. So brands overtake each other. Think of it as the turns in an F1 circuit, right? This is where the brands overtake each other. This is where platforms overtake each other. This is where new products are launched many times. This is where a lot of the innovation happens. These can be pivotal moments for your business. So it's very, very important.
So new normal. So this price year where new normals ka opportunity aa jata hai basically.
Exactly. You get new normal opportunities. So that was on 618. Live streaming is what we call basically new e-commerce. And what you call mostly e-commerce, we call it traditional e-commerce now in China. So marketplace, you know, going and buying direct from the site, like an Amazon equivalent is counted as traditional e-commerce. And live e-commerce is basically what the consumer is focusing on. And that's where a lot of the trial happens. That's where all the consumers go to find new stuff. That's where the engagement is high. Why? Because the, you know, what we call traditional e-commerce in the offline world is almost, you know, like going to a vending machine and choosing something and putting money in and getting out a drink or getting a bag of chips or something. You know what you want, you put it in, you come out. Live streaming is entertainment with commerce rolled into it, or infotainment with commerce rolled into it. And I think the real pioneers who took it off, I think many people tried it. No one knows who started it. Because everyone did a form of this. Even 10 years ago, people tried it, but that was like scheduled live streaming. It's basically what we call TikTok outside, and Douyin is the same company in China. And they let now influencers or brands or whoever run individual rooms where they are selling stuff. So yeah. You're demoing stuff and it's pretty seamless because you know your ID, credit card name, everything is already in the platform. So yeah. You just click to buy whatever you're seeing on the screen or whatever is being explained. And it ships. It's really, really seamless. I haven't seen a equivalent of it maybe in India yet. But maybe it will come.
If you go back 10 years, by the way, the platform still exists. I don't know how much time you spent in India in the last 20 years, but Shantanu, you may remember Home Shop 18 or Naptol TV pe aa rahe hain. You know, Mixer Grinder, ye raha, isme dekho, ye feature hai, call this number. It still exists by the way. Right?
Like, home shopping. Yeah.
Though it was a lot of friction to call and then place and discuss and stuff like that. But it's just that on steroids online, right? Because you are seeing and exactly. You're just clicking and then ho gaya.
But tell me one thing, how is the discovery in a scrolling manner or like you only go those stores ka or those influencers ka stuff comes to you based on your previous buying or is like how does one discover?
So it's like it's like any personalized algorithm. You open up the app in TikTok. Either you can choose to entertain yourself by watching short videos as per your interests, or you can go into a store, you can put an ad banner on your target audience and let them enter your store. So it functions pretty much like any portal, right? So there is a large entertainment aspect to it, but there is also shopping and infotainment. And all these things have got mixed up, basically. And because it's got mixed up, you can jump from one to the other. You can do them simultaneously. And sometimes it's difficult to discern between all of them.
If I go back, Arjun, didn't ByteDance start as just infotainment and then commerce was the monetization engine? Ya pehle se thought tha ye, would you know?
No. It started basically as what you saw of TikTok when it was there, which is basically short
videos.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't ByteDance start as Musical.ly, where you could sing along and then it became TikTok?
Yes. So it was heavily what a music. Journey. Yeah, the short content was heavily musically influenced in the beginning. And even now, you obviously put music and things like that. They're all types of videos. But like all platforms, it expanded its target audience, expanded its users, expanded the frequency. And went into many different things. And then obviously, commerce is always the best way to monetize platform like that.
I was watching something the other day where people were saying that I would come to the cultural nuance between, you know, live streaming commerce in China versus India. But I was watching something where I think Tanmay Bhatt said it very nicely. He said, yeah, we keep thinking creators are just dancing in front of cameras or, you know, kind of selling you stuff. No, they're scriptwriters, they're directors, they're everything. Because these platforms give the entire directorial scriptwriting, editing tools to you in the app. So suddenly all their creativity manifests. And that's why there is a huge delta between like a top quality creator who can actually learn all these tools and then obviously also a great performer, understands the pulse of the consumer, etc. Versus someone who's, let's say, doesn't know all that stuff or isn't able to ramp
up. Yeah.
Very interesting. And tell me, what is the cultural, like, so this has also happened in India. Like people have tried to do live commerce or video-based commerce, social commerce, bolo. So like there are 3-4, I think Revant and I have invested in a bunch of them, I think, together. And I think Revant, you also done it.
LA was 12 Bulbul wala phase, right? That was video.
Hyped or all things good and Vishlay.
So that is affiliate marketing platform. So two different stuffs, right? I think the broader problem is TikTok has, or Dayun in China, or TikTok outside that, has broadly merged the infotainment and shopping in one app. And as Arjun said, it's not discernible. Like, you just enjoy spending time on the app, right? And a lot of people thought that when Instagram pivoted to Reels and now YouTube has pivoted to Shorts, why is the shopping not closing there? But these have always been built culturally as social media platforms. They couldn't close the order there. Like, Google though has everything, right? Like, technically, why Google has not built a checkout, right? They have the GA pixel. They have your entire commerce listing. They have everything, if you think about it.
Chirag should have been there for this.
No, we've discussed this. I keep telling Chirag that at some point of time, if Google is serious about commerce in India, they should just buy GoQuick and plug it into every YouTube short video, click the button and, you know, order gets placed. But I think they're too scared about, I don't know if you've seen this, but Amazon doesn't get into social side and Meta and Google don't get into the shopping side. I don't know if you've seen this happen in the US, where they are a little, like they partner, like Instagram will say, I have, like they try to do shopping, but they shut it. YouTube, for example, in India has partnered with Flipkart Group as an affiliate platform. So on YouTube Shorts, like Douyin in China, if there's a short reel that is doing well and you like the product, you can click, Flipkart or Myntra opens up and you can close the order there and there. And they get affiliate income, right? So what you're talking about, Shantanu, with a wish link or a Hyped is they are trying to build a layer, which is a middle layer between the social media site and the commerce. So they are trying to be the bridge, like the API bridge between these two. And because it's a three-way platform, right? The creator has to also make money. So there is the platform, which is YouTube or Instagram. There is the platform, which is commerce. And there is the creator. So ye teenon ko link karne ke liye, that is the current attempt going on. Iske pehle, I think the Bulbul trial was more to try and see if could they replicate TikTok / Douyin in India. That's my understanding. Is that where we were, Arjun?
The first thing to start off with is that you have to have this algorithm which gets people to spend bulk or number one portion of their screen time on the app.
Yeah.
And simply saying, I'm going to do live streaming commerce without having that ability, you're dead on arrival, right? Which is probably what happened to these guys. And if you see how TikTok develops or you see the TikTok app, commerce or no commerce, if you look at your smartphone, the number one use case for the smartphone in the world in terms of number of minutes spent per day is TikTok or Douyin. That is the number one use case of the phone. So we put this supercomputer in the hands of billions of people, and the number one use case of that supercomputer, which is more powerful than the computers which sent the man to the moon, is to use to go and see TikTok, basically. So if you can get people into the app and get them highly engaged, then shopping can be a byproduct, or you can then funnel them into shopping to, use performance marketing terms. But if you don't have that engagement and viewership to begin with, it's very difficult to tell people, hey, come, why don't you do some live streaming and live shopping with me? Then it becomes like home TV shopping. And home TV shopping has been there forever, since when the Century had a 1.9 in front of it. And not a 2.0 in front of it, or a 2.1 or a 2.2 in front of it. At that time, people who are interested will go, but you'll never get that huge target audience, or you won't get like 800 million plus people going onto the app every day. That's the daily active users, right? More than 800 million people are going to the app. 800 million. Yes.
And this is globally, I'm assuming. Or this is just...
China. In China, basically everyone goes on that.
Out of the 1.4 billion people in China, 800 million people go to the app every day. If I take an equivalent in India, again, if I take Instagram, which claims 750 million users in India, spending close to an hour and a half now. YouTube claims 800 million users in India, again, spending an hour and a half.
As a DAU.
That's their claim. No, but I'm sure they'll be close.
Apparently an hour. It's apparently an hour, but that's because kids under 14 are limited to 40 minutes per day by law. That's why it's an hour. Otherwise, it would have been more. Sorry, go ahead.
So there's this massive opportunity lying in India as well, right? That kahin na kahin se toh ye attention can be funneled into... and today, they're monetizing it again through ads. Like, if you see YouTube and Meta, advertising income continues to be the fastest growing market, as well as ARPUs keep increasing. There was a time when people used to question Meta's ARPU in the US was... $40 and in India was $4. But Meta India ARPU is now at $12, $13, inching towards $20 in the next 2 years. Half of the US. So it's a massively, it's going to end up being a massively profitable market for Meta in the next 5 years, right? Through Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook, I think is winning, but it is Instagram and WhatsApp continue to rule the roost. YouTube similarly, while search is getting hammered a lot with AI, they seem to have this renewed focus on YouTube, because if you see, most brand marketing has now moved from TV to YouTube, but YouTube also is now going shorts heavy. So there seems to be an onus on trying to build performance there as well, right? So this opportunity in some ways exists. Let's assume that the algorithms are good. There is high engagement.
Yeah, of course, they're great algorithms.
But they have not been able to monetize the shopping part yet. And that's because maybe globally they have decided that they don't want to do shopping, etc. But how does an Indian brand look at what's happening in China and say, what is there to learn from this? Is there something that we can do differently than what we have been doing before? What should we learn from China? Take it, there's no TikTok here. Like, nobody's going to build that algorithm. We are not going to build that algorithm as a brand. Maybe it's a great startup idea. And a lot of VCs and prospective founders listen to this podcast. So I'm sure they'll they should definitely try something like this. But in today's day and age, looking at what is available, what should brands be looking at in terms of, because we discussed the lower attention spans, we have discussed massive opportunity, but still, and clearly you are saying that if consumers want to spend time on something like Douyin, and therefore in India on Instagram and YouTube, we should figure out a way to grab that attention and then monetize that as well. How has Douyin done it in China, or maybe in US or Europe, or and how we think about this in India?
Okay, so see, the grass always looks greener on the other side until you start watering the side that you are on, right? So it's very, you know, very easy to look at that and saying, oh, when is live streaming coming? But my thesis that I've always maintained many years ago, which you know, I've said many times and Shantanu knows it, is that live streaming in India is quick commerce. That's the equivalent. Because people are looking for convenience and speed you know, a way to hack and jump over the infrastructure challenges that they are. And if you look back to the equivalent soundbite that I gave you, that, you know, that Douyin has become the number one e-commerce platform, we don't have to look any further because Blinkit has overtaken Zomato in revenues in the last quarter. So, you know, it's telling you exactly the same thing. And if you again look at some of the consumer metrics or the consumer way of looking at it, if a brand wants quick, fast trial and awareness today and quick and fast distribution today in India, what is the best way to get it? Quick commerce, right? What is the fastest way to establish a new brand? Quick commerce. What is the fastest way to get new trial for your NPD? Quick commerce. You know, what is the fastest way to distribute your product? Go to quick commerce. Exactly the same as live streaming. So we already have in India the equivalent. It's just shown up in a different form today. And I don't know. I mean, I can't predict the future. Maybe live streaming will come and some platform will get it right. Or just one day Instagram and YouTube will decide that we want to monetize exactly the same way. And maybe right now, the focus on AI is much more important and a much bigger size of prize for these companies because they need to make the delta. See, also remember that TikTok or Douyin is a private company and they don't have public reporting pressure or share price pressure or things like that. As long as the small group of investors is aligned, they can continue on the action plan that they have. Whereas here, there may be different pressures and they need to focus much more and put all their resources into AI. So maybe they decided not to do it. I don't know it. I'm not sitting there and deciding the strategy for them. You can only backwrite the strategy. But I would say for anyone who's listening out there, quick commerce is live streaming, is the way I would think about it. And then you take those learnings of the consumer metrics and what is possible there and what is possible here. And it's once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Got it. No, it's a very fair point, Arjun. But going back to where the attention is, right? Today, quick commerce is also acting like a gatekeeper, right? If I go back to the example of what's happening in China with live commerce, it's attention is here. And you can monetize that attention. And let's say the Douyin shop will take 30%, will give 30% of the commission of your sale. Or you could decide the commission. Could be 20%, could be 30%, could be 50% to the influencer who's helping you bring your audience and stuff like that. And I'm assuming it works the same way TikTok works in Europe or US as well.
You don't need to necessarily run it with influencers.
Interesting. But my limited point is, the brand still has some power. Whereas if I look at the way quick commerce is shaping up, it's a massive gatekeeper business where the margins are exorbitant. The customer discovery still, attention is still happening on Instagram or YouTube or your own brand marketing. Like when Shantanu does a post in Marathi talking about his new razor, you know, a lot of the Maharashtrians are like, yeah, this is our guy. And that they may go to Blinkit or to Instamart or to Zepto and search for it, right? But he still has to make the effort outside the quick commerce platform to create the brand. Whereas the live commerce allows you a very integrated approach to create a brand and monetize it, right? Both are happening in the same place. So I agree with you that the quick commerce is maybe what is the India moment, if you can call it that, for the next few brands to get created and really emerge and become large. How do you get across the gatekeeper's test, if I can call it that, that today is happening across all three platforms? By the way, the margins are exorbitant. Nobody's making money. Because the margins will keep increasing. And you will be familiar with US and Europe where the retailer is stronger than the brand. Finally, that's going to start happening in India. Because Amazon and Flipkart also were built like retailers, but tech platforms. So they made their commissions very open. It was a tech platform. So you would sign up and that's it, right? Everybody has the same commissions. But here, it's about who has more negotiating power, who has a better relationship. So it's like Walmart in the US where anything goes, right? In that case, how does a new brand emerge? Because they're always starting with a on the back foot, if I can call it that.
Yeah. So, you know, honestly, if I speak to people running businesses in China, new brands or, you know, not Chinese people or MNCs, etc., you remove quick commerce and you change it with live streaming and they will say exactly what you said, that they are the gatekeepers to the attention economy now. I don't know how to get on there. I can't make money there. The between the platform and the influencers, they eat up everything. It's impossible to make money. So if I do it, I have a dilutive P&L. So, you know, having seen the emergence of many channels and, you know, many businesses over the years, I'll always say that the new kid on the block business, which is rapidly growing or growing exponentially, right, which is like day on day growth rather than year on year or quarter on quarter growth. Yeah. You will always hear the same things about these businesses. So when e-commerce first came to India or anywhere else in the world, when it used to come new to a country, people would say it's impossible to make money. The margins are very high. They are gatekeeping. They are not letting me in, etc. It's the same story, Revanth. There are only very few movies in this business world, and they just come with different subtitles every time. But the movie is always the same. So even here, the movie is very similar. You know, that movie is in Chinese and this movie is in Hindi, right? But you have to recognize the movie for what it is. The basic storyline is the same. So I would say that there is always a way. And, you know, in the rapid growth phase, everyone is trying to work out what is a ongoing way. But till it settles, yes. And, you know, what the business is today or what the margins are today or how little or how much money you make or what is the balance of power today, that always changes in business. There are always cycles and there are always ups and downs. And tomorrow something better will come. And then the customer is on the back foot. And then, you know, it's much easier for you to negotiate when you have an alternative. I think the great thing in the way that it's developing is that it's still a oligopolistic structure. You have three players. So, you know, there is a comparison. You can develop in different ways. One is a private company, two are public companies. You know, you have enough shots at goal. There it's become a winner-takes-all market.
And so a winner-takes-all market, very hard.
Yeah. Mm. Without that, it's very hard. So in a winner-takes-all market, it gets much more difficult. Maybe this will turn into a winner-takes-all market 5 years from now. We don't know. But right now, you have to work with the assumption that everyone will find their own footing. Everyone will find their own way. And, you know, people can be very demanding, or customers can be very demanding when you are growing X, 2X, 3X, 5X, 10X. But when the growth comes down, and growth always comes down eventually, right? When the growth comes down on the platform, then the discussions will be very, very different.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a fair point. Though India, it's looking like it's going to become maybe a duopoly, like food delivery ended up being a duopoly. Hmm. Very unlikely that we'll have, I know the public narrative from all the CEOs is that the grocery market is large enough. We will have six players on seven players, but clearly looks like even if it is six or seven, it will still end up being 60% plus with at least one person, which broadly still gives them a lot more power than maybe, a lot of the other folks as such. So I take your point and fully agree that, you know, in the end, you can't not play the trend. Like even if it's P&L dilutive, you can't not be on the platform and say that I will wait for the P&L to make sense and then I will go. That's your limited point,
I'm assuming. Yeah, I think that's the biggest mistake that a lot of people make. They say, okay, we'll wait to see how it plays out, or we'll wait till things settle down. And in business wise, especially when the consumer is moving,
yeah,
you cannot afford to wait.
Yeah, yeah, got it. And but how does that? Because you're on the boards of a lot of brands in India as well, right? And you would also see how their other board members who are venture capitalists who are looking to enter and exit in a 8 to 10 year time frame would also want to make sure that next round hoga or, profitable hoga kabhi na kabhi. But if the profitability keeps getting pushed because, pehle you had to bleed on Amazon to build a business, now you're bleeding on Blinkit, tomorrow you're going to bleed on some other platform, and this will keep happening, right? So then effectively the margin expansion keeps getting pushed out, if I can call it that. And that is a different pressure for the management team as well, right? How have you seen this play out in the Indian brand ecosystem, if I can call it that?
Yeah, so I think let's talk about quick commerce specifically, then we can go to a multi-channel approach.
Yeah.
I think I have not met a single investor who said, don't do quick commerce or don't figure out how to win here. I think that is like, that is something that everyone agrees on. And then once you start winning, people say, okay, now how do you optimize or how do you make money or how do you, you know, at least get to a reasonable P&L? And I think, you know, we're always discussing it in BSC with Shantanu as well. And I think we'll have a board meeting later on this week also. I'm sure we'll have that. It's a topic of discussion always. Now,
how do you make when margin on quick commerce?
Yeah. So I think the first thing to start off with is that business fundamentals remain pretty much the same. So you have to see like what is the structural P&L and design for that structural P&L. So let's take quick commerce as an example, that you start off with a certain P&L because you designed your company pre-quick commerce. Let's say you designed your company pre-quick commerce.
Yeah.
So you designed it for a world of D2C because you're a D2C brand. So, you know, in D2C, you can make some amount of money or at least get to EBITDA zero. You know how to do that once you have some scale, depending on which industry you're in. And Amazon, Flipkart, Big Basket, you know, all the usual suspects and maybe a little bit of offline, but most people would be losing money on offline. But when you look at the total P&L of this type of business going into it, if you're a company which is subscale, you know, everyone has their own metrics at where you should break even. But let's say that you would say that a home care company should break even at 50 crores, a food company should break even at 100 crores, and a you know, PPC company should break even at 200 crores, roughly. I mean, these are just like not hard and fast numbers, but let's assume these are rule, you know, things that you go by. And you figured out how to make your whole thing work, right? At this, so some channels are up, some channels are down. And then you know, suddenly comes this force of nature out of nowhere, three customers, and you figure out very quickly within the first 3 months or within 6 months of talking and seeing how things are developing, that all your trial, all new stuff, market share loss, gain, everything is happening in this new place, especially if you're a young brand. I think for bigger companies, not so much so. Because they have their base distribution and they have a moat of, you know, over a million stores. But here you see this and suddenly you figure out that what I've built does not fit into this new world.
Yeah.
So the first thing you need to do is you need to figure out how you fit into this new world. And, you know, we can talk some of the actions, you know, without talking specifics because maybe Shantanu doesn't want to let Gillette know what he's doing. The first thing that you always look at in a consumer business is that you look at your gross margin.
Yeah.
Because that's the starting point. And the question you ask yourself is, how can I expand my gross margin? And there are many, many ways to expand your gross to net. And you start working on that immediately. And, you know, we have quite a project in that, which we worked on over the years. It's an ongoing project in BSC. Shantanu, if you want to talk about it, you can. If you don't, keep it your trade secret.
We can talk about it. I'm talking at all.
But that, you know, that Shantanu can comment on it later on. So that makes a big difference. And the second one is mix, right?
Yeah.
You start seeing that if there is a new channel, one clue I'll give you, you know, whether the new channel is quick commerce or live streaming or e-commerce for the first time or something else.
Yeah.
The design of your new products or your design of your renovation or, you know, whatever you do or the types of NPDs you can launch, it opens up a new world. And when this new world opens up, you can automatically design the portfolio to be a higher gross margin to start off with. And the moment you can do that, you can start improving the mix as you go into it. And that simply just gives you more breathing room or more margin of error. And with that margin of error, you need to look at your activity systems. Do you need the same number of, you know, let's say salespeople calling it, or it's a much simpler business. So let's say in an offline business, you need 50 salesmen or a sales force of 50 to do something. Whereas in a quick commerce business, you need highly trained, very good B2B salespeople who can sell to these platforms or to the buyers in these platforms, but only 5 people can generate the same sales. So the activity systems around that become very, very different versus this one. And then you build a P&L towards that over a period of time. So I'll pause here. I'll let Shantanu comment on some of these things because he's seen these in action and we worked these together in Bombay Shaving Company. And maybe you can talk about how you've geared up for this world.
Yeah, I think fundamentally, and I think RBI has also been a big part of this because we discuss this very often. I think fundamentally, one of the advantages that we have is that we are in categories where competition is hard. Like the barrier to entry is much higher because designing products in our categories is much harder. So the category kind of fundamentally sits offline. Right? There is a trimmer version of it that sits online. but if it's now is now scaling a lot, whether it's razors or trimmers and then hence stuff around it, we don't have a lot of brands doing this. There are like literally you can count them on maybe one hand, right? So we have an advantage of having not having to look into the, in the rearview mirror for competition, which is a huge issue with quick commerce because dark store economics and dark store limitations just don't allow more than 4, 5, 6 brands per search word. If they have the 5 top brands, it will lead to a 95% conversion. They don't want the 6th or the 7th. So how does someone get in a crowded category is an issue that we have not had to solve. But on, I think the two things that have worked for us is, of course, gross margins, where over a period of, let's say, last 2 years, I think Arjun, in 2023 board meeting, we started something called Project Caterpillar, where we took every line item on COGS, whether it was assortment or procurement cost or packaging or whatever it was, and it led to a GM upside. We kind of did like a goal by 1,000 passes, 0.1% upside to get from 49% to now 55-56% and a line of sight to 60%. That helps because when you create that much gross margin, then you have an ability to kind of spend a little bit more on acquisition and sampling and stuff like that. And then the second thing that that worked for us was, I think, fill rates. I think the ability to kind of be present where quickly and within the time period, because these are also like they're still like doing like a store a week expansion, maybe even faster than that, right? So for us to kind of get into new stores, find distributors, find middle people to kind of stock in, you know, have those kind of terms was took our fill rate from, I think, 40-42%. To almost 65-70%, and for some of the brands in our 100 days portfolio, even more than that, is another, I think, the second thing where you know you don't lose sales, because in our business, the moment you lose a customer to Gillette, especially in the razor world, you've lost that customer for a year. Agar wo tumhara customer hone wala tha, lekin tum available nahi aur usne char cartridge le liye Mark 3 ke, then he's gone. Like you don't have him for a long time. So that's a huge, like that was another big delta for us. Third is, I think we actually, and there's something that I think Deepak will kill me for telling, but I think we want to own OPP, which is the opening price point across all the categories where we have our hero SKUs. If you own, and I think Philips has, I think, vacated OPP in male basic trimmers. We have controlled OPP, even in festive season, we have OPP. So OPP control is something you can do only when you have gross margin cushions. Otherwise, you cannot do it. And if you don't have OPP, then you will never get the new customer coming to the category. If you don't get the new customer, you can never get margin at a CMB level. So I think these 3-4 things had to come together. Plus, I think you are just lucky because if I was selling protein, like some of the stuff that Devan said, like it's very hard. I have to do a lot of, like, it's a lot of convincing, and the consumer really is engaged. It's something for my wellness. Or if you're like, we spoke to Samir, for example, at Health Card, or you know, you were with Shashank Arjun a few days back. In these categories, it's very difficult. And in fashion, for example, I cannot imagine what, let's say, an XY, XX is. Like, I don't know how you compete with Jockey, man. It's just really hard. 20 new companies coming in. In beauty, there are like 10 new companies coming in with 10 new things. So I think quick commerce is a new brand scale that you could test, but you'll have to lose a lot of money. So I think investors are also coming in. We have to realize that quick commerce is a bloodbath situation for a competitive cluttered category if you're a business there.
Do you think like there's a rule of 40 in SaaS? Does that sort of apply to consumer as well? Because I just took the numbers that you mentioned, right? If you are 20% EBITDA and 20% growth, that's also great. And if you're 40% growth and 5% EBITDA. Broadly, you're ending up this number at 40, right? Like you add EBITDA and growth, aap 40 cross kar rahe ho, toh aap bahut badhiya position pe ho. Is that a fair way to look at brands also?
I've never thought of it that way. I think...
Because I keep... sorry to interrupt, but this rule applies in SaaS. Ki growth plus EBITDA or I think it's free cash flow growth plus... and it sort of intrigues me that I've seen all these sites, and if I see investor interest, generally it merges around this number of 35-40. I think Webhav from Deserve, we had him on the pod, Shantar, we had mentioned something similar, right? That if you are 40% growth and low EBITDA, it's okay. Investors will still love you because they will presume that as you keep growing, EBITDA will accrue. But if your growth has slowed down to 20%, they want to see the best ever EBITDA that you are doing, which should be close to 15-20% as well. But coming back to that point, let's say slow growth businesses also apart more than 500 crores. Do you see brands getting to 20% EBITDA? Because I question that. I think the era of 20% EBITDA brands is over. Is that a fair or is that too pessimistic of you?
We have plenty of them. It's possible. It's possible. Yes, I would say that I have seen, but few and far in between.
For example, your investee portfolio, Arjun, where I think brands, let's say, who have were born in the internet era, let's say, or brands born in 2015, 2016, where a lot of the recipe cooking has to be done yourself, from distribution to brand communication and all of that, to product salience, etc. I talk to founders who are now at 400, like very few consumer brands are now at 400, 500 crores, right? Either growth has stagnated or just the struggle for profitability is very, very real. And even like 3, 4, 5, 6% becomes difficult. A large part of it is because, you know, margin drags are just so high because of evolving channels. I think if there is channel equilibrium, hopefully then you can get to like 10%. But from 10 to 20 is a huge leap. Wo pata nahi naye brands ke liye hoga ki nahi. So are you seeing you know, actually line of sight for brands who like you have invested in, or you are close to the founders, where yes, 1000 crore ka brand banega jo 2015 ke, like even like Mamaearth, for example, right?
Yeah,
the journey has been tumultuous on as a public business from a profitability standpoint, right? Some like the quarter on quarter is up and down, and maybe, you know, it takes time for it to stabilize because channels are just moving very, very quickly and it's a moving target. But do you see that happen?
There you go. This is the disease you're suffering from right now. So it's possible, and when it comes, it will come like crazy.
Got it.
But I would say right now, if you ask me, the percentage is less than 2%. And even but then, but there is a use case, let's put it that way, but it is very deliberate. And that is your focus, and you want to do that. And growth is not the only focus. So I think the company has to be focused on that. And you are at a point where, like, if I listen to a lot of stuff that you said, Revanth, about, let's say, about quick commerce, or again, I'm not trying to belittle the point. You are in the thick and you're facing this every day. And I have also been in this situation, and I know exactly how this feels. And sometimes you're like, iska to kuch nahi hone wala. There is no future, right? But that is exactly where, you know, in a cycle where you're running through, it's very easy to just not see the future and say, this is pointless. So you look at the brand and say, 20% kabhi nahi banega. Legacy brands made it, and that was once in a lifetime, and it's over. But yet, I would not be surprised to see, let's say, and, you know, I'm putting it out there because I think it's very possible. It's a beauty business. Let's say a Honasa being a double digit within a couple of years, and having a line of sight to being high teens for sure as a business by the end of the decade. Of course, it will depend on what actions they take and how they run the company and et cetera, but they're starting off with an advantage portfolio, you know, on the right trend of the consumer, having built a new age brand and stuff like that. It's totally possible. If I go back to like, you know, early 22 and 21, you know, no one thought that Zomato and Blinkit could make any money as a company or could do anything. And at that point, like the share price was like down to 50 or even in the 40s. Now it's touching 300. The enterprise is valued in a very different way. Now, I don't know whether it was undervalued then or overvalued. Now, I'm not, you know, I'm not an expert at that. But at that point of time was the point of maximum pessimism, where they said, this is pointless. This company can never make money. Nothing can happen out of it. There was a point of time, again, I don't know the exact month, maybe 2 years ago, whatever, where people thought Paytm will go bust. Today, it has 1,000 rupees in, you know, per share price. And it survived the, you know, people said UPI will wipe out this company. So everyone goes through this. I think it's totally possible because the structure, the basic structure of an FMCG business, definitely in personal beauty care, or let's say in D2C type of brands, which are running premium businesses, you know, in a target audience, which is expanding as the country gets much more affluent. Because at the end of the day, all of us are in this, either in the business or as investors or looking at it, because we have some optimistic view of the future, right?
Yeah.
And that optimistic view of the future is that there is affluence, the GDP will grow by multiples. Therefore, wealth will flow down. Therefore, people will premiumize, people will spend money, and then there will be a profit pool as a result of that, right? Nobody can predict when it comes, but when it comes, the P&L changes faster than you can see it. Because the thing is that once the P&L starts working, the leverage in the P&L and the muscle of, you know, tweaking little things, because you build organizational muscle over a period of time. And, you know, once again, I'll use, because I'm Shantanu's in the room, the muscle that they have today to manage a P&L of launching a new SKU versus what they had even 12 months ago is completely different. They can get to profitability much faster than they could have got 12 months ago on any single SKU. And the questions you ask are very different. So as you move your portfolio towards that and you get scale, you can get better. So today, maybe 1% or 2%, but I'm sure that by 2030, if you say, you know, from a portfolio point of view, 20% of the portfolio will get to it, of the surviving portfolio. Mm-hmm. Let's put it, there will be busts as well.
Yeah, yeah, understood. I think that's a great perspective. I think the one of the problems me and Chirag also talk about is SD is in the 10th year of his journey. We are still in the 5th, 6th year. And it's actually very eerie that that chart makes sense, right? Like you're always, with the questions keep changing, right? Pehle it's ki PI kaise aega, phir it's like scale kaise aega, ab it's like profit kaise aega. And then you keep thinking ki yaar goalpost change hota rata hai. How do you keep designing your business for this changing goalpost? And the math doesn't seem to work out with the data that you have today. But what you're saying is you are continuously building muscle. Aap roz gym ja rahe ho, aap jaate raho, jaate raho, jaate raho, aapka muscle build ho raha hai, the answer will emerge. Per se. Fair point.
Actually, I want to also ask you, like, sorry, go on.
No, just on the Zomato Blinkit example, I'm not challenging the yet. The eerily, when the stock price was 55, everyone was not clear what Blinkit as an acquisition was, but more clearly also food delivery ka kya hoga. Today, if you see, every brokerage firm doesn't still accrue any value to the food delivery business. The food delivery business values is the same that it was at 55 rupees, which is 4-5 billion. All the rest is to the new business that they have created in the last 3 years. So, honestly, Arjun, that worries me. Hum muscle build kar rahe hain, but wo muscle ka usage hamesha kahin aur lagate rehna padega. Like Avnish keeps telling me this fondly that the day a founder gives over, like I keep asking him, ki, why are there so few professional CEOs in India, right? Unlike the US. And he's like, the day a founder says that, like, let's get a professional CEO, it may work out sometime, but my belief is India as a market still needs the founder because wo pivot chalte rehte hai. Muscle aapne build kiya hai, culture aapne build kiya hai, aage aapko ye karte rehna padega. Ye answer easy nahi hai. Like, their pet peeve or LP's pet peeve is why VC funds in India take 15 years to return capital. Wo 15 saal lag jate hai, wo answer nahi. Maybe it'll get faster, but it'll still not be like 5-6 years. It'll still be like a 10-12 year period where the answer will emerge on the real business value, profitability, ROCE.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, Revan, what you said is that actually it's not just true about India, it's true about anywhere in the world. That founder-led businesses on the whole as a cohort do much better and grow value much faster or grow value versus, you know, companies run by professional CEOs. Of course, there are exceptions on both sides of the rule, but as a cohort in general, you know, if you are looking to minimize your risk, then you want to have a person at the helm who has very high skin in the game. Very high skin in the game. Because your life depends on it.
Yeah. Like, you know, as we start having these IPO conversations, also it becomes, like, I did not know how important promoter ownership will become. Like, it's become a really, like, critical thing. Who are the promoters? Kitna ownership? I'm like, why does that matter, yaar? If the company is being well-run and there's a... I thought key management personnel will be, like, an important thing. But for some of these guys, it's just, like... I actually want to ask you a question on the parallel, which is, I have a feeling that, you know, and we see this in our categories also, right? Ki, let's say India, there are 30 crore people. Revan, sorry, Arjun and I, Arjun has many years in Gillette and is on the board of BSE. So some of our examples and analogies will be from this world. For example, India mein 30 crore shavers hai aur 3 crore log trimmer use karte hai, right? And hamare internally wahi sochte ki yaar 3 crore se log 6-7 crore ka trimmer user ho jayenge India mein. So how do we get, like, let's say 30% of the incremental users of trimmers, right? But andar hi andar wo fear rehta hai ki yaar ye 2-3 crore se 7 crore tak jayega kya? Like 7 crore log honge kya? 1,000 rupees ke cheez mein. The country is just a lot richer, and you know, income disposable income spread across the pyramid is actually much higher. But in situations like India, where frankly this is like 5 crore people we are catering to effectively for all of these new age brands and so on, including quick commerce, by the way. Like frankly, if you like do the Pareto for quick commerce also, fairly, like someone was telling me that like almost 95% of Zomato Bangalore's business come from like a 5 square kilometer area. 95%. I'm crazy number, right? Rajinder is a meditation only things. So in that kind of concentration, etc., is then profitable growth becomes hard because the whole belief is ki yaar PMF aa gaya, price aa gaya, thoda bahut scale aa gaya, gross margin acha ho gaya. Abhi jo 500 crore se 2000 crore ka jo journey hai, wo abhi offline karenge, wo abhi we'll go to, you know, India to India 3, we'll have an assortment that works for them, etc. May not actually, like, it may be a false promise, right? And has China dealt with that? Have you seen that happen with, you know, like, say, brands that you have also built in or you have invested in? Yeah, or a TAM question than yours.
Yeah, it's more of a TAM question. See, again, I think that you have a, you know, a economy which is doing very well and has a long growth ahead of it. I'm coming back to that optimistic view. And you have a GDP, and there are cases that it has to follow, which will go from, you know, on a journey from 3 to 15 trillion or 4 to 18 trillion, whatever number you look at, right? Like a tripling of GDP. And as you do that, the disposable incomes will increase, and it also depends how the wealth is distributed, right? So we can't take any of these things for granted, and we have to assume that, you know, the right policies will follow, which make sure that there's a wealth distribution effect that also happens. But in general, you can see that, you know, the country will get richer, or there will be more disposable income. And what is the rate of increase of disposable income is something that you have to see how it goes, and you have to make the right plans. But, you know, no plan survives contact with reality is also true. So you have to work your way. You have to work your way through it. And sometimes even the best laid plans, like you'll think that it will take trimmer to 7 crores or whatever the number is. And you realize that you find something better along the way, which is not yet invented, and you invent it, which is a better way to build the business. You don't have the answer, because each opportunity opens up a new opportunity for you going forward. But, you know, if you run the simulations, the trimmer business that you have to, you know, seemingly double it, or for the TAM to double in the next 5 or 6 years, is not a big ask basis growing economies that you see across the world. I won't compare the trimmer from here to China, because the hair growth profile is like completely different. I can't imagine that they will need the trimmers, because the amount of facial hair growth is very, very different. So the usage and frequency at all will be much less, even though they do use it. And clean shaven is the look to follow there. But I don't see a problem, honestly.
Understood. But I think a lot of the bet is that the markets will expand in India 2 and India 3. And I think we've discussed this on the pod also multiple times, that India 2 and India 3, may market expansion actually might be a little less linear than we thought. And so once founders have to be a little more cognitive, I think there was
habit creation also, right? You have to get into habit creation. You have to pivot. If you see what you started with, which is your 2000 rupee box with a double-edged razor, overpriced double-edged razor, which is, and where you are today selling trimmers, is very different. I don't think you started off saying that I'm going to sell trimmers one day and that's going to become bigger than the double-edged razor, right? Or in the middle where, you know, you veered off and became a personal care sabun and accessories company rather than a shaving company. And we had to have a discussion about it, saying, you know, shaving is in the name of the company. So, so, you know, you have to learn and pivot and change with the times. But the broader space that you're in, which is grooming, hair removal or hair management, that is going to stay on for a time. And you are building muscle of knowing what are the various ways of hair management, regardless of gender or regardless of body part.
Yeah.
And it's a much bigger picture. So I think the bigger picture is up, but I won't get married to any of the details, because those details every year change. And that's why you make an AOP every year. Because if I ask you to make an AOP 3 years out from now, it will change every quarter based on your latest information.
But inherent gap aa jata hai na, Arjun, ki now that Shantanu, if he goes and tells a SBI mutual fund CIO ki yaar 3 saal ka AOP dunga lekin har quarter change hoga, to haath bhi nahi lagayega IPO ko, because that's exactly what the mutual fund guys want. So how does Shantanu move from what you are saying ki yaar 1 saal ka AOP or details won't matter, to if he wants to list, the ask is going to be, bhai, show me every detail on an Excel sheet ki kaise grow hoga karke ye. That transition, again, I know I'm going back to that, this is pointless chart, but these are the conundrums that most CEOs face today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have never taken a company public, but I've seen both sides of the game and worked on both sides of the game. So maybe I can try and you know, give you a framework that, you know, let's suppose it comes to our board and we have to have a discussion. So what I would say is that, you know, by the time you feel you're ready to go public, you have some metrics in life, right? You have a certain amount of revenue. You are able to show that you can make some profit, because there's no point going, because, you know, people want to see your earnings per share, and you have a certain way of working. So at that point of time, what I would do is a model which I use on every business that I have run practically, you know, in the last 10 years, is that I would divide the business into two or maybe even three parts. And we can take BSE and divide it into those parts right now. And one part would be that I have a business in which I have scale, I'm pretty good at, and I have a reasonably predictable business with a reasonably predictable growth. You know, let's call that part of your business be big. And because I understand the category and I've built, like Shantanu says, he's built 10 years of muscle. Maybe when he goes public, I would say 15 years, but his VCs would kill me and say, no, he needs to go public in the next 2 years. But let's assume he lands up somewhere you know, between 12 and 15 years becoming a public company. He has a 2 to 5 year window from now, right? In that window, there'll be a certain business which is profitable. He knows the category very well, has a strong brand equity, and it's largely a predictable business. That would probably be the male business. And on that business, or part male plus part of the female business. And on that business, he would be very clear that he's in a loop called plan, execute, review learnings, iterate, plan, and the cycle continues again and again. But you don't need to do anything silly in that. You just need to do continuous improvement and Kaizen and throw in, let's say, a couple of NPDs or whatever. But it's business as usual. You know, that would end up being 70% of his business. So to the, you know, to the new investors coming in who want to see the company go public, or the people who want to hold long the company, they want to see some predictability. So I think 70% of your business, and you'll also see it in your business, Revan, because your different brands and SKUs came at different points of time. You have a largely predictable business and you run that on a single operating system. Then you have another set of businesses. Let's call them BFAST, where you're new to those businesses and you're learning those businesses. Maybe it's a new category for everyone. You're building a new habit, or you entered something which you're not that familiar or that great with. That could be trimmers today because it's growing like a weed. Or that could be some new business tomorrow that, supposing they say, let's launch a third brand. And on that part of the business, they need to be fast. And that is like running a new D2C company in many ways, right? Or running a new consumer brand company, where you have to fail a lot and there are lots of iteration loops. And the faster you can get into loops, you can keep moving through those loops. And as you learn that business, you can graduate it into be big over a period of time. So that is, like, let's say, your innovation engine or some new stuff engine. And we don't know what that new stuff is. But what we do know from the 10-year history and at that point of time, the 12 to 15-year history of BSC, is no matter what happens, the promoter or the promoters and their team have an ability to come up with something new. And we have seen that time and time again. And those are the examples that they will use when they go to IPO and say that, hey, we can do this. So therefore, we don't know what this part is going to be, but we know we have a track record in innovation. And that's the innovation engine or the new brand engine that we have. By the way, as I'm speaking, I'm sure that in your mind, you're drawing all the parallels to the flagship company, which is the D2C company, which went public. And seeing, you know, that there is a main brand, which is Be Big, and then there are all the new brands that they acquired, which are these Be Fast. And then there's some other stuff that you do, you know, that's the third model you may choose to do or not do, because the first two are more than enough to run a public company, is that you get into this thing called Be Bold, where you don't know what you don't know, and you use a lot of external help, or you let external people do stuff, or you outsource things to them. Example would be all the companies which are publicly listed, which have given Shantanu 100 days business. For them, it's a Be Bold business. Because they don't know how to do it. They've given it to someone who knows how to do it and they'll run it and help them run it. But for Shantanu, that's not a Be Bold business. For Shantanu, that's a regular business. He knows how to make money and EBITDA on it. In fact, from year one. And that is a EBITDA engine of the company. So if you take these engines, you know, roughly if you're running a good business and you're running a fast growing business, which is spitting out EBITDA, the first 70 is also bulk of your profit. So you get into a situation where you say bulk of my profit is predictable. Bulk of my revenue is predictable, which is what moves the share price. There is an area where I need to invest in and learn that area pretty well over a period of time, which is, you know, let's say 20% of the business. And there are unknown unknowns, which is 10% of the business. And I have to keep doing those things, because when the next quick commerce comes in, quick commerce on day one was the unknown unknown. I can't miss that trend as a company, because that's what I use to disrupt other companies.
Yeah.
And you can create a construct like that where you can be reasonably predictable within a range. No one, you know, no one is saying, tell me that you will grow at. They're saying, tell me that you can grow 10 to 14. Or, you know, if you're a big global listed company, tell me whether you can grow 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, or 4 to 5. And on a, you know, 10, 20, $100 billion base, those numbers end up being very, very big and very, very meaningful and share price moving numbers. So, you can get to a point where you can predict. And obviously, when you guys reach the IPO, I'm more than happy to sit down with you guys. I'm sure there are better people who can tell better stories. But having seen both sides, I think it's totally possible. I'm just trying to say that.
I love that.
Yeah.
Be big, be fast, be bold. It's very, I love that framework, actually.
Yeah.
Is that like, very nice? Is that one of yours, Arjun, or is it?
Let's say it's something that Addy and I worked on. Originated Be Big, Be Fast originated with him. I added on the Be Bold at some point of time. But over the years, we worked together, we ran our businesses that way.
Mm.
Let's say, like, the investment that we've done in BSC is Be Bold. Mm. We don't know how to run this business. We have no idea. Mm. It makes no sense.
Now it does. Like, oh.
Yeah, yeah. I'm saying we learned a lot from it, right? But we could not have done this and learned from it as an operational business. We don't have a right to be in this business. So the stupidity would be to try and launch into this category out of scratch and try to build this. We would have not been able to do it because not our core competence. And typically, Bebold is outside our core competence.
Very good point. Very good point. Levin, have you ever thought about acquisitive endeavors? Have you acquired any brand? No. You've built everything from the ground up, no?
I have a... Again, sorry, I have very strong views, Arjun, but I would love to hear your thought on this. My fundamental belief is any brand that is up on the block, I'm not talking about a minimalist Joe to solid PMS, 3000 crore mein beka hai, but I can't acquire anything more than 100 crores, right? So any brand that is up for sale at a sub 100 crore or sub 200 crore price point, by design doesn't have PMF, then what are you really buying? Like you are either buying a brand, a product or a distribution. Distribution kisi ke paas nahi hai. Wo to retail, everybody has the same distribution. Or brand or product almost synonymous at the early stage, right? The product is the brand, the positioning, the proposition, etc. Any brand or proposition up for sale at a low scale, in my view, doesn't have PMF because India mein itna venture capital hai. Agar PMF hai, toh matlab line laga ke log khade hue hai paisa lene ke liye. So then what are you really buying? So thoda sa first principle lagta hai, lakin, matlab, I have evaluated everything, but I've never really found it ki main karunga kya iska. PMF hi nahi hai, toh agar PMF hi lana hai, toh might as well build versus buy is my limited thought.
Yeah. See, you're mostly right. I'll say you're 85% right because the person who makes money in a M&A transaction is always the seller, right? So 85% of the time. So the odds are pretty much like starting a new company. Let's say the odds of starting a new company in India and failing is 93%. And the odds of buying a company and failing is 85%. So you have a slightly higher probability of doing something with it. Let's examine like what's the difference, right? I have a framework which I always use and, you know, most of it is learned through error rather than, you know, doing anything spectacular in life. And the learning basically is that you have to know what you're buying and what the value is and what you can do with it, right? And there are three filters typically to be used. The first one is that, you know, are you buying for the sake of buying or does it really fit in with your strategy? So is it giving you like a shortcut basically to get to 2 years out or 3 years out or something like that? So I think that's the first question I would ask. The second question is that, can I scale this better than the current team can scale this? And you have to decide what you're... Sometimes you're not buying the company, you're buying the employees. It's an acqui-hire, right? So, and you can use them to scale something better for yourself. So again, you have to be clear what you're buying. But the question is, can you scale better than the current people? And the third question is, am I a better owner of this asset than the current owners? You know that... And if you see any M&A transaction which is really successful, either they bought it really cheap pennies to the dollar and did a little bit with it and sold it, or it meets these criteria and you can do something with it. Or sometimes it's, you know, you have a discussion and you see that, listen, the money involved is very low. Obviously, we can't say what it is, but Shantanu and I have looked at stuff where, you know, you stand to lose 1x, but this 15% probability that exists, if you can slightly make it successful, you can 10x it. You're very clear about it. And in that case, you should always take that shot.
Yeah.
But you have to be very clear because M&A...
Said by Ja.
Yeah. It ends up being an emotional decision in many cases, right? An emotional, ego-driven decision. So I would say from a probability point of view, you are absolutely right to just stay away from it and say, don't waste my time. I'd rather build. I have enough things to do in life. And generally, you know, a lot of people reach M&A other than these 15% of scenarios, you know, every scenario exists when either they are bored or they're out of ideas. So as long as you have enough ideas to grow your business and you're not bored, I think you're absolutely right, Revan. Don't waste your time. Especially when you're such a small company, the whole world is ahead of you. Yeah. You have so much more to grow.
Yeah. No, I think I see everything, but it always ends up falling in that 85% bracket. That's my limited point. Like, I actually think Honasa's acquisition of Dr. Seth was a fabulous one. I think the science-based ingredient skincare trend was just on its peak. And I think there seemed to be PMF, and I think it was a weird situation where the cap table was such that more money was not able to come in. They got it for a very cheap price. And now I hear it's a 200 crore brand. So they bought it at, I think, when it was 15, 20 crores. So it's 10x from there. And their machinery is great because after having built 4 or 5. So I'll tell you where...
But they're better owners, right? So it fell in with the strategy. They could scale it better than the current people, and they are better owners of the asset. It ticked all the boxes.
And I'll tell you where it will start emerging as a problem statement for me. It's very hard to do 0-1 once the business becomes larger. Like, I may have 20 ideas, but as the CEO of the business, I also need to stabilize the ship. And with a 70% predictability bonus, Arjun, that starts becoming a large part of my role over time. Unless I can find someone to run that while I can, you know, do the new ideas again. One of the reasons I did 3 brands in first 3 years was because I knew, having done this at Rebel, when I did the second brand in the 6th year of the business, bahut friction aata hai. The existing system really pushes back.
But you have to create the operating systems for it, right?
Yeah, yeah. I can so figure out.
You'll work it out. It's definitely, you can work it out. I can tell you that that's how, even today, I would run my business do all three of these things. But you have to build different activity systems. You have to build an organization in a certain way. You have to build your processes in a certain way. And you have to make sure that they only share as many resources as they need to. But you don't measure the businesses with the same KPIs. I think that's very, very important, because it's a temptation to measure the 10%, last 10% or the new 10% of your business with the KPI you use for the 90%. And that's where you run into trouble. That's where it becomes impossible.
Yeah. No, you're right. I think the context switching required at the leadership level continues to get more complex as you try to build this operating system, because you have to keep, they first design the KPIs and then remember that this room mein mujhe ye question puchta hai, wo question us room ke liye tha karke, right? Aur wo aap din mein 4 baar kar rahe ho, which it's easy for founders. If you ask me, it's harder for professionals unless they are given the time and space to build that muscle. One of the mistakes I think I have made is ki yaar main kar pa raha hu, team kyun nahi kar pa rahi hai? And then I realized that founders pivot very quickly. Employees take a little longer because their context is not the same. So to set that context, make sure that they are fully aligned, and then train them to think that way, it's a task in itself. But that's the process we are in, because we've not done any big innovation in the last in India, at least. Like, it was easier for me to do geographical expansion. Like, every year we do something new, and it's getting easier to do audience and distribution versus brand creation. Brand creation is super hard. So that's the only place where I'm at least always open. I'm not, I see everything. But there's a, unfortunately, nothing has met the bar, because actually wellness mein hai bhi bahut kam na. Like, my single bar is, we will not do non-wellness. So supplements mein na brand hi bahut kam hai, Arjun.
चौथे दिन कोई सप्लीमेंट ब्रांड का मेरे पिच डेक आ जाता है बाबू चौक और चॉकलेट
बट फंडरेज है ना वो अभी वो एक्साइटेड स्टेज में है कि मैं अब धंधा बनाऊंगा आप मेरे को फंड करो
पैसा दो
एक्विजिशन के लिए वो आते हैं जो आधा करोड़ 1 करोड़ पे महीने का कर रहे हैं दोरे के अब क्या करें राइट उसमें फिर वो फ्रेमवर्क आ जाता है सो आई टेल यू द मोस्ट एक्साइटिंग अपॉर्चुनिटीज फॉर मी हैव बीन एडजेसेंट कैटेगरीज Like somebody doing a gym equipment, which is technically health and fitness, it's a great brand, customer love. I can take that to supplements.
Yeah.
That would be very exciting for me, because that's my muscle.
And something, and something you can't do on your own. Like your DNA is not to build gym equipment.
Very confident gym equipment. But bro, brand saliency na health and wellness. So you could enter through even like a if there was a Lululemon equivalent in the country. Smaller, obviously, aukaat nahi hoti badi ke, but even those are adjacencies. Like, I don't see any reason why you could not go from yoga mats to supplements as well, right? Because that's the TG end mein. TG bhai hai na, share of wallet le rahe ho karke tum, aur brand saliency hai with fitness. So those are very exciting for me, though, because mere hisab se wo perception bithana ki ye brand mere liye hai as a fitness conscious person, guy, girl, like, you know, male, female, those are harder to build, yaar. Wo तुम कितना इनोवेशन करोगे कि अच्छा देखो फिर वो देयर इज समथिंग इन गुजराती कॉल्ड पत्थर खांडवानू बेसिकली यू नो यू जस्ट कीप हैमरिंग 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 बट वो थक गए लोग अभी कि यार मैं एक और वेरिएशन निकालूंगा कि मेरा जो प्रोटीन है वो यूरोप के ये गाय ने इस घास से खा के फिर जब दूध दिया तो लाइक आफ्टर अ व्हाइल देयर इज नो मोर ऑप्टिमाइजेशन ऑन द सेम लेवल्स राइट एंड वी आर एक्चुअली दिस ओवर इंफॉर्मेशन टुडे इन आवर कंट्री इफ यू आस्क मी ऑन इवन ऑन हेल्थ एंड वेलनेस लाइक वी हैव द सेम amount of information that the rich people in the US have. Paisa nahi hai, supplement, ya aadat nahi hai, gym jaate nahi hai koi. Like if you see, I don't know if you saw the latest podcast between Srinivas and Mukesh and Naresh, the CureFit leadership, effectively they are preparing for their IPO. And the number of people going to the gym is so low, yaar. So, activity nahi karni hai. But information sab chahiye ki, haan, mere health ke liye achha hai. But kuch karna nahi hai uske baare mein. So, I think we have over-information. The funnel narrowing down to people who are actually doing it and need the supplements is much smaller.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Hey, but this has been outstanding, Anjun. Really, really appreciate you taking the time. Do note that while this is the first time we have spoken in depth, I am not combative. I just like to put a
different. No, I'm not saying you're not combative. I was just saying you can take that type of view, or you can take the other. That was a range of views.
I like people to be challenged and say, ki yaar nahi, aapka viewpoint kya hai. But varna, we usually end up getting the party line. So thoda sa wo, like, again, go back. It's a reflection stage, right? Unless I am challenged. So for that, I also need to challenge and say, ki yaar, achha, let's see what comes out, right? And when you get challenged, you start thinking a little differently and saying, achha, haan, ye bhi sochna chahiye. Yeah, different styles. I think Shantanu's style is too kind and high listening board. Chirag is charts. I am the talkative, combative reflector, if I can say that.
So Chirag did come today. That's why the charts didn't come out too many. Too many of them didn't come out.
Aap jo data bol rahe the na, wo sab ready rehta uske paas.
I think today was outstanding. I think just I know a lot of frameworks. I think we might need to do a second one dedicated to some of the frameworks and examples of business building that you have experienced, because today I think was more around consumer and founders and the India market and strategic decision making. I think that's one thing we, like, at least I struggle with a lot. Is it's very hard in chaotic information to actually take right calls, and just the comfort to take chaotic decisions has to be built over a period of time. Otherwise, you'll never, especially to come from McKinsey, most of us come from like business school where you worked in like structured environments. Founders ke liye bahut difficult switch rehta hai. And I was talking to a very senior person who used to be my client at McKinsey many years ago. He's now at, he heads the motorcycle business at Bajaj. He's a senior guy in Rajiv Bajaj's team. Hmm. He's like, boss, that guy has been in the business for 35 years. After my 5 days in office, aata hai. Us fir 3 din wo R&D center mein baitha rehta hai. Baki 2 din humare saath reviews hota hai. Decisions are made like on pure gut. Like, he doesn't have a laptop or whatever. He's only on phone. Now the WhatsApp pe company chala raha hai, 55,000 crore ka revenue WhatsApp pe chalata. But the gut is so powerful, and on ROCE and, you know, capital allocation and decision. He just knows. You're an engineer by heart. You're like, Rajiv, an engineer by heart. IQ of 165. And it's so, wo jo muscle hai na, I don't know whether it comes from like watching your dad do it or whatever. That somehow, like, we have to, like, I really wish I could fast track that muscle build.
You're one third of the way there. You ran the company for 10 years, so you're one third roughly of the way there, or almost one third of the way there. And we always say,
you know, right? Those choto choto in those small, small lines. So, you know, it is pointless wale lines mein abhi to.
Yeah. How do you build a great brand fast, slowly, right? Or as the famous going says, right? Slow is smooth and smooth is fast.
Yeah, that is true. That is so true. And in a world like today where patience comes at so much premium, like people are just so impatient. It's crazy. It's just crazy. Like, I do these discussions with like incoming employees sometimes, and just like, when will I get to 20 crores of net worth? Like, how? Like, why is that the question? You know, like, sure, you should. And I don't know if it's the function of this whole influencer thing on Instagram or whatever. People just feel like money grows on trees. Like, nahi hoga hai. Like, this 0 to 1 is, they have khud bana. Frankly, if you want to be worth 25 crores and your compensation is 15 lakhs, but yeah, frankly, you're not going to get there earning money. You're going to have to go and create equities and kind of really find your own way to build it. I think this patience is a massive virtue now.
Yeah, definitely.